It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
And one of the things we've been talking about, Homeowners Association with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. Mm-hmm. Wes, Cecil, good morning.
Good morning, Lockwood.
You know, it is interesting with the Homeowners Associations, and we probably need to recap some of what we talked about last week, but I'm still fascinated by the fact that homeowners associations have such significant authority. But
they govern themselves, yeah. And that sometimes becomes a problem. You know, when you have folks who have all kinds of different backgrounds, a lot of the individuals who end up on the board of directors may be retirees because maybe they have a little bit more time than the other folks who may have to mm-hmm. go to their 9-to-5s or whatever their work might be. And sometimes those personalities just don't necessarily mesh.
They crash.
So. Lockwood, let's start by saying this. Here it is, the middle of October. Mm-hmm. We are very busy down at our office, making all of our corporations walk and talk and look and act like a corporation.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And let's just go there for a moment. Because a homeowners association, most times, it's rare indeed. Some of the very old ones, but all of the contemporary ones, if you will, are usually incorporated. Mm-hmm. They are nonprofit corporations. And, of course, a nonprofit corporation does act a little bit differently than a profit corporation, but albeit the same, it is still a separate entity, Lockwood. Mm-hmm. A corporation is its own entity. And in the state of North Carolina, in order to be a viable and valid corporation, there are certain formalities on a yearly basis that should be conformed, that you must conform to. One, of course, is to file with the Secretary of State an annual report. And the most important aspect of that annual report is to set forth for public record the registered agent of the corporation,
right.
so that we all know how we can get in touch with the official somebody who is in charge of that corporation, not necessarily a president, but that we can communicate and that they then will communicate with the corporate entity. That's known as the registered agent. They receive, of course, the official service of process, if you will, for the corporation. We, of course, are very busy at our office doing our shareholder meetings and then our board of director minutes meeting for the year. And we do this during September, October, and November so that by the time December 31 rolls around, all of our corporations have met
right.
and have documented themselves and have placed into their corporate minute book annual minutes. That will be followed up, of course, by March the 15th of next year with the accountant doing the corporate tax return. The annual report is looked at on the website, the North Carolina Secretary of State website, and is updated and is filed. And then that corporation is ready to go for yet another calendar year. And Lockwood, if these formalities are not conformed with, then it is likely that one could lose the corporate veil, could lose their corporate identification, and we don't want that to happen.
Can that happen to homeowners associations?
Well, the standards in the statutes are with regard to nonprofit corporations mm-hmm. are lower than business corporations.
Okay.
So what Cecil was referring to, and most of what he said just a moment ago was really under North Carolina General Statute 55.
Mm-hmm.
55A is the statute that we deal with dealing with nonprofits. So there is a relaxed standard there as it relates to meeting minutes and those type things.
Right. But a lot of the, and I completely agree, of course, but a lot of the corporate law, though, Lockwood, is applicable relative to homeowners associations. For instance, the board of directors,
mm-hmm.
you know, the officers, they have a fiduciary obligation to the greater entity, to the corporation.
Right.
They had the duty of not self-dealing.
Right.
What is in the best interest of this association? And we have cases in our office where this is a bit of a problem every now and then. You know, the personalities are such that maybe what is happening in that association or in that subdivision is not really for the betterment of the whole, but because it just happens to be the lot closest to this or the lot closest to that, or it's going to block my view to this or block my view to that, a decision is made. And that, of course, is outside the scope of what really a corporation and corporate law would dictate, because corporate law is going to dictate that the officers and the board of directors act in the best interest of the corporation.
This goes back to that question I mentioned a few moments ago, and we need to bring up, there is state regulations, there's state law that establishes the privileges of a homeowners association. So a homeowners association, am I hearing correctly, is partly a corporate structure and then partly also a authority, for want of a description, a legal authority for establishing.
Yeah, there are many different layers that we normally see when we're talking about, you know, a homeowners association, those starting with the covenants or declarations that we talked about last week. And that's really old common law. You know, if you're going to restrict someone's use of their real property, then you have to put on record what the restrictions are before they buy the property from you, that type thing. Then you look at the corporation itself. You look at the bylaws, look at the articles of incorporation. There may be some, well, there will be in the articles in the bylaws, some governing language there with regard to how the corporation, you know, operates. And then, as we talked about last week, we even have that additional layer of the North Carolina Plain Community Act, which applies to many homeowners associations, given some uniformity. So I do want to piggyback on a couple of things that Cecil said with regard to walking and talking, acting like a corporation. Where we see the liability question come in as it relates to homeowners associations is not so much do the shareholders or owners, meaning the people who live in the subdivision, do they potentially have personal liability with regard to some acts of the corporation? That's not where we see that question of liability come up. We see questions of liability more along the lines of, do the board of directors, are they breaching their fiduciary duty? Are they acting outside the scope of what would be reasonable? And the law that governs that falls under what's called the business judgment rule. And basically that body of law in North Carolina indicates that as long as there was a reasonable basis for the board of directors making whatever decision that they have made, then personal liability is not going to extend to them. Instead, the liability would be that of the entire corporation. Now, one of the elements of that we look at would be if the board of directors are following the advice of legal counsel, then it's almost impossible to get through the business judgment rule to the board of directors individually.
Okay.
So obviously that's why most homeowners associations have, well, one of the reasons that most homeowners associations have legal counsel, so that, you know, when they get to the crossroads and they don't know which way to go on a particular issue, then their attorney can tell them where to go, and they're, you know, they're really scot-free as it relates to the decision they're making. But if they go out on their own and they start making decisions that are maybe advantageous to their neighbor or advantageous to some people but not others, then they could potentially bring individual liability upon themselves.
Well, that goes back to this dichotomy, if you will, of a homeowners association and a corporation. Let's take that case in Raleigh where a homeowner was unhappy with the design of a new home that was being constructed in a homeowner's an HOA.
Right.
They initiated suit. They blocked the construction of the home, took a great deal of expense on the part of the new homeowner, the builder.
Sure.
They've been penalized by time and expense, I'm sure.
Right.
Do they have recourse against either the homeowner that initiated it through the homeowners association, or if the homeowners association, due to a, if you will, a democratic process, chose to pursue cessation.
Well, that,
the new owner of the property, the developer, the builder, now has, of course, made its way through the court system. The court system has said, no, you can go ahead and proceed. What is the recourse on the part of that injured party in this case?
I'm going to answer that question at the end. Let me tell you a couple things. That is the a perfect scenario illustrative of the point that before you build in a homeowners association, mm-hmm. in a subdivision, you need to make sure that you comply with the rules. You need to make sure that if there's an application process that goes before the Architectural Control Committee, if there is one, you need to comply with that, and you need to get your stamp of approval. On the other hand, the Architectural Control Committee, who is a subsection, basically, of the Board of Directors, they're usually appointed by the Board of Directors, needs to be, needs to take these applications seriously. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying they need to impose restrictions that are beyond what's allowed, but, they don't need to just rubber stamp these, because in the event they do, and there's some type of breach of the covenants, whether the house is too large or the garage is facing the wrong way or whatever it ends up being, then you never know when an owner or a neighbor is not going to be happy about that and then bring an action to try to enjoin that construction, to stop the construction. Well, then we potentially get into issues of, well, you cost me X amount of dollars because of the interest that I lost on my construction loan, mm-hmm. during the 6, 8, 10, 15 months that I couldn't build. You know, you cost me this, you cost me that. And in the event that the Architectural Control Committee didn't do its job, in the event that they rubber stamped, in the event they blatantly missed something in the covenants, then the person who's building the property could certainly have a viable claim against the homeowners association, because if they had followed the rules and made the person who was building comply, then there wouldn't have been that damage.
I want to come back to this in a moment right after this break, because I'm curious, is there liability insurance that homeowners associations need to acquire? And we're chatting with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. By the way, we haven't even given this number out. If you wish to call in with a question, you're welcome to do so. A 910 area code of our listening on is 353-4674, 252 area code 247-7282, and the toll-free number 800-818-2255. Let's talk legal with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. We're talking about homeowners associations and organizations, and it's a kind of sticky law. The association goes back to the question goes back to the issue of a homeowner that is feeling injured, or feeling it may possibly be financially injured as a result of a dispute on the homeowner's board that's cost him or her or them the length of time construction of the home. They've now had losses. Does the homeowners association itself have some sort of liability coverage? Should they have some sort of liability coverage for this particular case?
Well, they're going to have directors and officers liability coverage, and they're going to have general liability coverage in the event someone, for example, gets injured on their property. Mm-hmm. But under this scenario, in the event a lawsuit was filed, it's filed against the neighbor, the disgruntled neighbor, maybe against the homeowners association itself because they failed to follow the rules. There's a lot of twists and turns to that lawsuit I can think of that really gets complicated. That's beyond the scope of what we need to talk about today, but
it's not so much to get into the details,
yeah.
but rather the fact that
right.
this kind of event can and has happened.
Yeah,
so So homeowners
association. But there would be insurance to provide a defense to the homeowners association at least. I mean, to pay for their defense counsel. And there likely would be insurance to cover any damage in the event there was damage in that scenario. However, you would have to look at the liability of the person building as well. I mean, were they trying mm-hmm. to get buy with something, you know, that type of thing. So, and then that brings us to kind of the next issue. Most people don't know it, but typically in a homeowners association, not only can the board or the association itself bring a civil action for like a breach of the covenants, typically the property owners, all property owners may do that as well. They have the right to enforce their own covenants. So they don't have to just rely upon the homeowners association board of directors to enforce in the event that they are not enforced. Now, that gets a little bit complicated. We deal with that sometimes in our office. You know, over the years, we've dealt with it a lot of times. But it's pretty well known in North Carolina law, and it's typically in the covenants that not only may the association enforce provisions of the covenants, like, for example, you know, if someone's building an unauthorized structure, mm-hmm. or someone is, you know, erecting a huge retaining wall that's creating a problem, right. and the association's not doing anything about it. Well, you can ask the association to do something about it because it's in breach of the covenants. You have to give them 90 days to do so. In the event they don't, then you can bring what's called a derivative action. And then in the event that you prevail, finding that this retaining wall is not in compliance with the covenants, then you're entitled to recover attorney's fees as well for prosecuting that claim. So,
from whom do you receive the compensation? From the homeowners association or from the individual building the retaining wall? Just using it as an example.
It would most likely be from the association. So, and that could potentially be an assessment made against everybody in there, including yourself. So. You know, I mean, but if there's, you know, 100 property owners, and let's just use a round number. Let's say the attorney's fees were $100,000. Let's just a round number. Well,
that's $1,000.
You're $1,000 out of your pocket, $99,000 out of everybody else's pocket. Okay. So we're getting really complicated this morning. I apologize.
This law
gets complicated.
Well, I go back to the issue that it catches my attention on the homeowners association. In and of itself, it's its own governance. Its own governing body.
Sure.
And it has the privilege of establishing, if you will, its own municipality, just short of being its own municipality. And yet, at the same time, going back to what you started off with, Cecil, it's also a corporation. So it has, you know, it's kind of neither fish nor fowl, is my description.
Right.
And so you are dealing with homeowners associations in your activities there, Harville and Collins, right?
Absolutely.
And as we talked last week, Lockwood, our listeners, one of the most critical aspects of this is to just understand or attempt to understand what you're buying into, quite frankly. You know, this should be a material part of all of the folks out there who are listening, who are purchasers or who are investors buying a home or maybe a rental property, whatever the case might be, to really kind of look into the current affairs of the homeowners association.
I want to get back to that very quickly before we wrap things up with Harville and Collins, Cecil Harville and Wes Collins here this afternoon. Pardon me, this morning. I'm doing too many programs. By the way, I want to remind you they have their local number, 252 area code 726-9050. 726-9050, that's Harville and Collins, or online at harvilleandcollins.com. The other issue is related to condos. We haven't even gotten to that. That's
right.
Got to be a really messy affair for homeowners associations. We're talking now with Cecil Harville and Wes Collins with a few minutes left to go, about 2 minutes to go. The topic of condos, and, you know, mm-hmm. I was talking about if you have condo structures, multiple structures, but they're one homeowners association, one structure is damaged, it's potential that the entire owners of all the units in the entire complex will be assessed just to maintain one structure.
Well, if the covenants allow it, then that's normally the way it would work. And typically your covenants are not going to be, you know, particular to building 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, they will be particular to the condo association, all of the condos. So typically when you see an assessment, the assessment is going to be condo-wide. Wow. Across all the property owners. I mean, that's typically the way your documents read, and the document is like the Bible. I mean, that's how the association has to operate.
And this goes back to your comment a few moments ago, Cecil. Before you make the purchase, you've got to do your due diligence.
Well, you do. And as to this issue, you need to know, you know, the age of the condominium development, the structure, the construction issues, if any, and look at all of those things. But of course, Lockwood, how else would you have it? I mean, the condominium association is there to govern the whole.
Right.
Okay. And to keep the value of the entire property, at its whole, if you will. Well, if you've got one building, you know, that's about to fall down because, it had a structural problem, got a building right next door that's doing fine, you know, the building that is the neighbor, the damaged building is going to pull down the value of the good building. So you have to look at the whole. You can't look at it in parts.
Yeah, but there are a lot of times when the folks aren't, they're not permanent residents. They look
Correct.
At it as an
yeah.
investment.
Many they're times not happy about that.
Yeah.
They're not happy about that.
Right.
But that's the kind of stuff we need to know about and understand as we move into that kind of investment, that kind of home ownership.
Because we're now seeing more and more homeowners associations, HOAs, are we not?
Absolutely.
I mean, everything from maintaining water and sewer systems, drainage systems.
Well, I mean, just look around this area. When a new subdivision pops up or a new residential area, they're all homeowners associations.
All right.
And in your metropolitan areas, you know, Lockwood, I mean, Raleigh, Durham, I mean, you know, Greensboro, it's almost impossible to find, you know, a property to own that's not governed by some sort of homeowners association, either be it a subdivision
or condo,
gated community. Very, 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 very popular.
The right advice at the right time.